Welcome back. I do not remember when Dmitry Samarov and I first met. It's going to be decades ago, I think. And I misspoke when I said that he came to Chicago in 1978. That's when he came to the United States of America from his native Russia and spent his youth in Boston. I wrote about him most recently in 2019 when I wrote this. Dmitry Samarov came to the United States from his native Russia in 1978. He was a little boy, but even seven-year-olds have dreams, and in the decades since arriving, Samarov has realized a great number of them. Some of them were on the shelves and walls of where he was standing one afternoon last week. It was a wonderful bookstore in the Fine Arts Building. He makes art, and he writes, and he said, remember this, Dmitry? My life is all freelance and flexible. The goal is total unemployment.
Yes.
I love that.
I've used that. I've used that for years. My dream is to be unemployed. Yeah.
You live in addition to tending bar, you live a creative life, and part of that creative life, trying to sustain that creative life, was driving a taxi cab. And
yes, for many years.
We share that. Yes. I did not try. I drove it for a couple of years when I was young.
Yeah, I did 12 in two cities.
That experience informed two brilliant books.
Well, there's three because, I combined the first two books into one and did a kind of a director's cut. I actually rewrote the whole thing.
Wow.
But this is one of my COVID lockdown projects, was putting out this book called All Hack, which collects all the cab writings. And I actually wrote about Uber and stuff, too, in it, and added it to the end of that book. But
you were a rideshare driver, too?
Well, Uber came into Chicago in 2012, which is the last year I drove a cab.
Yeah.
And they recruited me because I was like a quote-unquote
famous cab driver.
I had a book out.
Who's a more famous cab? Travis Bickle. What's his name from Taxi
Travis
Driver?
Travis Bickle, sure.
Travis Bickle from Taxi Driver.
Are you asking me if I'm more famous than Travis Bickle?
I'm asking who else. I'm asking if you know any other famous cab drivers.
There's a bunch of people that have, the composer Philip Glass drove a cab, I know.
Okay.
There's some other ones. I have a whole collection at home. I don't collect books specifically by genre except for cabbie memoirs. I have dozens of them, and they're horrendous. Yeah. When I need an ego boost, I look at those books.
Why are they horrendous? Self-indulgent?
Badly written. Very badly written. Not usually, put out by Vanity Press or, self-published, which I shouldn't laugh about because that's what I do now. But, put out my own books. But, these are, very sincere but very, very badly put together books
What compelled you to the first one? You started writing about your cab driving for other publications, right?
No, I first started. So my first go around with cab driving was in Boston, from 1993 to 1997, and that was when I briefly moved back to Boston after graduating from the School of the
Art Institute
here. And my first job out of art school was as a cab driver, after having just learned how to drive. I'd learned how to drive the year before. I was late to driving.
Were you a good cab driver at first?
No. Nobody's a good cab driver at first.
I thought I was. Yeah,
but you drove a cab in the city that you knew.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but I think I became a pretty good one pretty quickly. But so I drove a cab there for about 3 years and did some other jobs and then moved back to Chicago in 97. And a couple years after that, these things that happened in the cab in Boston just kept eating at me. And prior to that, I'd never had any designs or aspirations to write anything. But it was that experience that sort of slowly over time turned me into a writer. And
your designs and aspirations were to a career in the visual arts.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, if you ask me today or any day, I'm a painter first, second, third, and fourth.
Yeah.
And somewhere down there is this writing thing that happened later.
But the way in which what so appealed to me and would appeal to you, ladies and gentlemen, if you go to Dmitry Samarov, I'll spell the website for you.
They can misspell it on Google and it'll find the website. right. But yeah, because I have a weirdly spelled name. But yeah, it's DmitrySamarov.com is my website, which leads to all the stuff.
You can see his artwork and see this and get copies of the book. You have become, grown into what I think of as a pretty stylish and beyond capable writer.
Thank you. I've worked pretty hard at it.
Well, see, I know how hard you worked at your art, but talk to me about how writing, you know, which I've been doing for a long time, did it come easily to you? When you had these stories, you had a story about something that happened in a cab ride in Boston, and you said, you know, I'm going to sit down and put this on paper. The compelling reason was, I suppose, that you thought it was an interesting story and that other people would like to read it. How hard was it for you to write it?
It was pretty hard, but they started basically, you know, I made a zine. It was before computers. I was late to computers, but like this, my first attempt at telling the story came out around 2000, was called Hack, which is short for Hackney Carriage, which is a Hackney Carriage license is what they used to call a cab license. In Boston, but what they mostly were drawings with like a line or two of text, which I typed up and cut and pasted, and spent hours at Kinko's doing layout the old school way.
Interesting.
But over time, there was more and more words. But the images never left, and the images are always the jumping off point.
Yeah,
for almost all my writing.
What you seem to do is, there are other people who have done similar things. Mm-hmm. Was there anybody you admired who was doing this kind of thing or had done this kind of thing?
I think I stupidly didn't, at least early on, look for
good
models
for
that way.
I
just didn't know. I mean,
I don't think that's stupid at all.
I'm a lifelong reader. My father's like the biggest reader I know.
Yeah.
Books have been in my life forever. But so there was stylistic writing stuff that, well, I had to unteach myself from.
Yeah, sure.
I had some very bad habits learned from favorite writers. But luckily, by the time my first book came out, or prior to, which was put out by University of Chicago Press, that was my grad school or a writing program for writing, because I'd never been edited before. I'd never written anything but a homework assignment, you know, and these little zines, and then that turned into a blog later.
Right. I remember well.
Which caught the attention of the reader and some other people.
And then the people at UFC came to you.
UFC. I had an incredibly charmed path to publication that is not even hardly even by a tiny percentage been replicated with any of my other books. So writing, quote unquote, career has been bass ackwards, as they say.
One of the things that Hack was, I think, something of a mild sensation. It attracted the interest of a guy named John McNaughton.
Yes,
yes. He's a mutual friend of ours.
Who's become a very good friend of mine.
He's a wonderful person, too. He's a film director. I'll never forget, when I first met John, I had seen a film of his called Henry, Portrait of a Serial Killer, that was part of the garbage day of the International Film Festival here. And I met John, and he didn't have enough money for a cigarette.
Yeah.
I gave him a cigarette. Then he flirted with kind of Hollywood.
Yeah.
John wanted to make perhaps a television series.
Yeah, he optioned Hack right about the time it was published. And, I mean, you know, to all intents and purposes, there's still an option.
Wow.
He went further. He wrote a whole bunch of episodes.
Exactly.
This prospective TV show. And I guess at some point it made the rounds with some studios, but I don't even pretend to know the machinations of Hollywood, but at this point, because of the subject matter, it would have to be a period piece.
Yeah.
Because the cab industry is dead.
Right, exactly.
You know?
I am talking until a quarter after six with Dmitry Samarov, who is as talented a creative guy here. He's a great artist, great visual artist, and he has turned into, from modest beginnings, a terrific, terrific writer. He's got a book review in in the latest edition, I think, of The Reader. I read it. I read a lot of stuff this morning, and his book review was a book.
Oh, yeah. This week it was. It's a book called The Apology by a writer named Christian Tabordo, who runs the creative writing MFA program at Roosevelt University. Yeah. He's written this kind of funny, kind of weird book called The Apology, which is sort of an office kind of comedy satire, but it's, yeah, it's very well worth reading. It'll be out in November, I think.
Good. We'll continue on a conversation about the creative life, and it's not, it ain't easy. We'll talk about where he bartends, and you can go have a drink. And
tonight.
Yeah, tonight. Here, yeah. Seriously, get dressed wherever you are. Get dressed and come have a drink. We'll be back. We're back. Dimitri Semenov and I were talking about mutual friends and the good mutual friends. A guy named John McNaughton, who's one of the most talented.
Yeah, who, by the way, I think, I don't know if they're out yet, but there's new DVDs or Blu-rays of Henry and his second movie, The Borrower, which nobody has seen because it's been out of circulation forever. But
yeah, there was
you can
some,
actually track those down.
I must tell you, people, if you were looking for certainly a movie that fits the list of the top movies ever made in Chicago, Henry, Portrait of a Serial Killer is among them. It is terrifying, but it's also beautifully made.
And it's just a great movie.
It's Chicago.
Yeah, I mean, forget if you're squeamish about killing or the serial killer genre. I mean, just watch it as a documentary about Chicago in the mid-80s, you know?
Yeah.
It's just almost incredible.
It's like something, it's Algren-esque
Well, he thinks it's a comedy.
Who does?
John does, yeah. John thinks it's hilarious. That movie is hilarious, but that's John.
That is John. John is. I miss it. I miss seeing
it. It played at a movie theater I worked at in high school, and it left an impression in Boston. Yeah, in the late '80s, and it left an impression.
Well, he wanted to. He also made some big Mad Dog and Glory was an interesting film.
Wild Things.
It's a fun, really
smarter movie than you think. Yeah,
good old Southsider. Good old Southsider. Mm-hmm. He tried to get, and may still. Who knows? Eventually, every one of these new Amazon Prime and Netflix and this, they want material, and it was John's.
Yeah, I mean, it's a bottomless hole that they keep trying to fill, so maybe they have room for a show about a Chicago cab driver.
Yeah. Now, the balancing that has to go into being a visual artist and a writer, and I know you said earlier in this show that you always consider yourself a visual artist. You consider yourself an artist first.
Well, it's the thing I've done since, I don't remember ever not doing it.
Yeah.
I've done since childhood. It's how, I told somebody, the best way I've said it's how I talk to the world, is through marks, on a page, and they're not words.
Well, one of your most recent books, if not your most recent book, was the one that combined music and art. It was about...
Music to My Eyes.
My Eyes, which is a great title.
Thank you.
And it told me that whenever you would go see music, you would go with a sketch pad.
Yes, I bring a sketch pad everywhere, and that book collected about 200 drawings from the past 30 years or so. It came out in 2019.
Yeah.
And what I did there is I chose the drawings, and then looking at the drawings, I wrote what I remembered from the night or from the afternoon.
Yeah, that's a great book.
Thank you. And that's the first of the kind of cycle of four books that have come out that I've kind of made soup to nuts, more or less myself. That was made in partnership with Tortoise Books.
Jerry Brennan,
who you've had on. But
who I admire, too. That's the kind of publisher I like.
It started me off. It's the book that I learned, began to learn how to lay out books, how to find a printer, and do everything sort of behind the scenes and the kind of like the sausage making part of book production.
Was it pleasantly revelatory?
The control freak kind of aspect of that any creative person has.
Yeah.
That part was very satisfying. There was some small measure of pride in learning that I could do this. I could blunder my way through the software programs, the design software programs.
Book. I mean,
thank you.
It is a beautiful book.
But I think they've gotten better, is what I'm hoping.
Yeah.
So I've done four books this way. They're all hardcovers. They have a kind of foil-stamped cover with an image on the front, and they're all limited editions. And, you know, I got to put in stuff that, you know, when I basically I ask myself the questions of, like, you know, when I think of a book, what do I think of? And it's things like end papers, you know, illustrated end papers.
Sure.
And hardcover, you know, without a dust jacket. Are these, I hate dust jackets,
are,
you know?
So do I. Are these books all done at, with Tortoise Books? Or
no.
No.
Only the only Tortoise one is that music one. The three that came after, I self-published.
Okay.
Through the same printer, McNaughton and Gunn, up in Michigan, and they just... They do a really good job, so I just kept working with them.
You have total control. I've self-published one book. I think Charles Osgood and I did one of our Sidewalks books like that, and it was really amazing to have that kind of control.
Well, yeah. I mean, part of the education of getting into book publishing, you know, when I got into it, I had this charmed process
with UFC,
you know, one of the most reputable, you know, university presses in the world. And I learned how they did things, but there was so many things that were a mystery and so much waiting that I had no access to because there was all these other people doing things that was not my department.
See,
and suddenly when you make everything your department, you get all the credit and all the blame. And
well, I am all for you know, sort of self-publishing. I really like what Jerry Brennan's doing. I like the whole idea of a small press. I think it's the, if not the... wave of the future. It is certainly a huge aspect, and not to be drowned by, you know, it'd be nice to get an advance check like James Patterson for like $10 million or something, but that's not the
way. But yeah,
it
at this point, that's the only thing that those big presses can offer.
That's right. Well, it's
a chunk of money, and
it's the only thing they're interested in because they don't go out about what they used to do 40 years ago, would be to nurture someone like you and say, here, we're going to print 5,000 copies.
No, I mean, I thought, as you said, you know, Hack sort of made a little bit of a ripple, like, you know, it got some notice. I couldn't get an agent out of that. I couldn't get a second book. I learned the hard way how little it was worth, you know, at that time.
We'll carry on with on that bright note, on that happy note. We'll carry on after some commercials and the news and the weather, and I'll keep him here till 6:15 because he's got to go bartend. We'll talk about that too, so stay tuned. You will be charmed and delighted and enlightened if you go to the website Dmitry Samarov. That's dmitrysamarov.com. He's got a lot of his artwork there, a lot of his writing. Where do you, you're leaving here and you're going to go tend bar, which is like your real job.
Well, I don't know if it's a real job. It's a very part-time job, but it's a great place to watch and listen to people.
What's the address?
Skylark. It's a 2157 South Halsted or 2159 corner of Halsted and Cermak.
There you go.
Yeah, a really nice neighborhood corner bar.
And when are you there?
8 o'clock.
No, just one night a week?
Sundays, and then I fill in other ones, but yeah.
And it's like you're like the radio, the bar version of Rick Kogan.
Exactly, yeah.
But you like to talk to people, and I've seen you out and about. You and I are not great salespeople. I've seen you try to sell stuff.
I don't know about you. I know I'm not.
I'm bad. It's the commercial side of creativity that sort of gives you pause, doesn't it, Dmitry?
Yeah. Well, yeah. It's very hard for me not to do it ironically. The sales job, it doesn't come naturally, but in the absence of anyone else, like an agent, a representative, I have to do it myself. And,
Let's talk about the artwork for a second. How do you go about having a commercial? How do you go about living through your artwork?
It's all bits and pieces, kind of. Now, you know, I write book reviews. I write other sort of editorial type stuff, and then a bunch of design stuff visually, like book covers, record covers. Pet portraits are a really good source of income for me.
And do you like doing them?
Well, it's easy. And I'll tell you, I didn't start doing them until...
You don't have to satisfy the pet, but you have to satisfy the owners.
People in this country spend an absurd amount of money on their pets, especially those who don't have, you know, human children.
Right.
Those are the children. And, I discovered I had to get into my 40s to be humbled enough to do pet portraits. You know, a younger, more idealistic Dimitri would have scorned this kind of prostitution of whatever little talent I have.
But you are no longer. you are, and through your website, you will do commissioned work of all sorts. I mean, some of the stuff of yours that I really, really admire greatly are these sort of city scenes, like buildings and things like that. I'm overwhelmed by them. You did for me, because I joined your something or other, a lovely portrait of Ben Hecht, too.
Oh, yeah. Because you threw a bunch of money at me for my newsletter. I have the Substack newsletter.
A bunch of money. It was like $100, a bunch of money.
It was a substantial amount of money for me.
I know. Well, but I'm getting something for it. It wasn't like...
I write a newsletter, which is free every week on Mondays, but if you pay some money, you'll get a second one on Thursdays.
And if you pay that extravagant, exorbitant fee of $100, he'll give you a painting of
I will send you art if you send me more than the $50 a year or whatever it is to subscribe to the paid version.
Go to the website. You will. I'm serious. There's a lot to this young man. He's younger than I by a couple decades. Dimitri Samarov, DimitriSamarov.com. Jack will put this all on the website and give you a way to get to him for his artwork and his writing. I think he's a creative treasure in Chicago. It's good to see you.
Thanks, Rick. Always a pleasure.
Anytime. It is always a pleasure. That's the other.
I'll come back anytime you ask.
Well, the show gets a little pinched and beaten up during football season, but you'll be back. No question.
Terrific.
No question.